Chapter 17. The Reaping. The Sothanellus came in from below towards the Veritas Ferrum. Helmsman Caryctas guided the frigate towards the belly of the monster. On Calibus's orders, he had taken the Sothanellus far beneath the plane of the ecliptic, even as he had begun to turn the ship for the attack run. The Sothanellus rose now in a steep diagonal with respect to the Veritas. A cloud of demonic ships was approaching, some of them in line with the Sothanellus. Beyond them was another cloud, the billowing thunderhead of the contracting necrosphere. The Veritas's escort was almost in range.
"We have time for one attack before we are destroyed," Calibus said. "Let it be our most ferocious. For Ferus Manus and the 10th Legion, for Durran Atticus and 111th Clan Company, we will strike against the corruption of the machine."
He paused, watching the Veritas Ferrum grow larger in the oculus. Already it was so huge, the bottom of the hull covered the stars. The Sothanellus was rushing towards a ceiling in the void. The ceiling had eyes and mouths. It slavered with hunger. At least it had no guns.
"Helmsman,"
Calibus said,
"we fire and then we withdraw."
The command left a foul taste in his mouth. It was contrary to the design and spirit of the Sothanellus. It was not made for a darting attack. He had no choice. The scale of war had changed. In head-on confrontation with the colossus the Veritas Ferrum had become, the Sothanellus would not last long.
"The machine is adaptable,"
Calibus thought.
"The tool is shaped for the task, or else it fails."
He had adapted since Istvan V. He had sacrificed his strike cruiser, Bane of Arsenoth, in a run that had only appeared to be a retreat, but had been a trap to destroy an entire fleet of the Emperor's children. This time the flight would be genuine. One strike.
"I will gut you if I can," he thought.
The Sothanellus rose higher. The Veritas Ferrum filled the oculus. The Auspex screens in the Strategium flashed red as the first of the escorts came in range.
"Fire!"
Calibus said.
"Fire everything," he thought, "and burn, you foul thing. Burn for defiling your name and the memory of the heroes you have betrayed."
All banks of torpedoes launched. Every battery of cannons opened up. The entire forward's armament of the Sothanellus fired. A swarm of projectiles streaked towards the behemoth. The plasma batteries discharged moments later, their fury timed so that the blasts would hit the Veritas at the same time as the ordnance. Calibus counted the seconds of the barrage. The moment of the first pause came. He shouted,
"Hard to port and down! Port and down!"
Caryctas confirmed. The view in the oculus changed slowly. The shells and torpedoes and focused plasma blasts hit the Veritas Ferrum before the turn was well underway. The explosions flared in the upper left of the oculus. The flash overwhelmed the view. For several beautiful seconds, the demon ship vanished, hidden by the incandescence of the barrage. Calibus watched, willing the attack to have opened a gaping wound in the enemy's hull. The flames boiled away. A giant eye in the hull was punctured. It oozed a sea of ichor over the hull, spreading armour. The surface of the Veritas swirled at the impact sites. Storms formed in the demonic substance of the ship, then passed. There was no breach. There was no damage. Calibus witnessed his opening salvo in the void war turn into an empty gesture. The Sothanellus turned from the site of futility. It angled down and away from the Veritas. It was prey now, and it began the race away from the predators.
"Captain," said Satyricus, "Auspex readings of the Veritas are changing. There's a deformation in the lower hull."
Calibus turned to the Pict screens in the Strategium. The rear sensors assembled a hololithic rendering of the enemy. Below the snarling bow, a new spike protruded. Levanus said, "It's growing a gun."
"Hard to starboard,"
Calibus ordered.
"All power to the engines. Caryctas, get us out of its line of fire."
The deck vibrated with the sudden strain on the engines. Caryctas, silent now with his entire consciousness melded to the machine spirit of the Sothanellus, pushed the ship to its limit. The hull groaned with the turn. The manoeuvre threatened to break the frigate's spine. Klaxons sounded as stress damage spread the length of the ship. Calibus exchanged a look with Levanus. The Raven Guard nodded. They braced for the inevitable. The run had been a long one since Istvan V.
And the fight has been a worthy one, Calibus thought.
The Veritas Ferrum fired. Lightning blacker than the void flashed from the spike and struck the stern of the Sothanellus. It cut the ship open. Warp flame erupted, a firestorm of night and green enveloping every deck of the rear third of the hull. The spine snapped. The frigate broke in two. A greater blast came. The material and the immaterial destroyed each other, and the explosion hurled the two portions of the ship away from one another. The blackened shell of the rear tumbled down, guttering and disintegrating into the dark below the plane of the engagement. The blast sent the forward section into a spin. Uncontrolled, helpless, the Sothanellus turned and turned, drifting as the giant predator closed in. The jaws of the Veritas Ferrum gaped wide. Calibus and Cruax yanked Charictus from the throne. The helmsman's limbs spasmed. Neural feedback from the mortally wounded machine spirit shook through his body. They pulled the mechadendrites from his spine. They made for the stairs to the main deck of the bridge, supporting him between them until he could walk again. Levanus was one step behind. There was light on the bridge from the picked screens and emergency lumen strips. Some secondary generators were running yet. In its dying moments, the Sothanellus fought to remain on duty. Smoke poured into the bridge through the main doors. The wavering glow of flames came from the main hall.
"Abandon ship!" Calibus ordered.
His battle brothers were already on the move.
"We make for the gunships!
We fight still!" Cruax growled.
"Or so we will tell ourselves," Calibus thought.
"Yes,"
he said.
"We fight still."
Levanus echoed him, and so did the legionaries of the 85th Clan Company as they abandoned the bridge. When three Thunderhawks left the only functioning launch bay, Calibus muttered the words to himself again. He looked through the viewing block of the Karashi's fire at the end of the Sothanellus, and the defiance felt hollow. The frigate turned and turned, a broken femur, as the Veritas Ferrum bore down on it. Ignited gases flickered at the edges of the stump of the hull. Minute flashes were larger chunks of wreckage. The bodies of lost legionaries and hundreds of serfs were falling through the void too. They were invisible. The Thunderhawks were specks in the void, beneath the notice of the demon ship. Calibus waited for the jaws of the monster to crush the remains of the ship. The Veritas Ferrum snarled, closing in. Then it clamped its jaws above the frigate. It passed over the Sothanellus. The last of the frigate's lights went out. The immensity of the Veritas was above the Thunderhawks now. Mile after mile of horror sped on, seeking the larger prey of the fleets. It glowed with a putrescent light. The blackness of its hull was broken by the red shine of the eyes and maws. The barrels of the huge cannons were bright with infernal fire. It moved through the system like a diseased sun, bringing its own light. It was the bearer of terrible revelation. Calibus looked up at the pilgrim and understood the superstitious awe it had created on the worlds it had visited and transformed. A large mass rose through the dark to meet the ruin of the Sothanellus. Strapped into the grav harness next to Calibus, Cruax uttered a guttural cry when he saw what was happening. Calibus felt the cold touch of anticipated horror. He was not surprised by what he saw. Now that it was happening, it seemed inevitable. The mass was the stern of the Sothanellus. It matched the spin of the forwards half of the ship. Metallic tendrils reached across the space between the two portions of frigate. They met, fused, multiplied. The Sothanellus reformed itself. With unity came corruption. The hull bubbled. Its plating squirmed. Foul light blazed from the superstructure, silhouetting the transformations of the statuary into grotesquery. Eyes opened on the flanks. The frigate became a pitted, gnawed bone reflection of the Veritas Ferrum. Dwarfed by the bleak majesty of the great monster, the Sothanellus was a ghoul, a thing to feast on the leavings of its master. The engines flared to life, slowing the spin, then stopping it. The Sothanellus moved forwards again. It bore down on the escaping Thunderhawks. The port cannons fired. Green energy flashed. It vaporized the Forge of Will. There was no point in flight now.
"Correct us,"
Calibus foxed. The helmsman was piloting the Karashi's fire.
"Captain,
turn us around. Open fire on the Sothanellus."
"So ordered, Captain. It has been an honor."
"The honor has been mine."
The two remaining Thunderhawks reversed course. Guns blazing, they hurled themselves at the revenant Sothanellus.
"We fight still,"
Kruax said.
"We do,"
Calibus said.
"To the end."
He detached his grav harness and stood. So did the other legionaries. They would meet the end on their feet. At his side, Levanus said, "We have made a good war."
"We have,"
Calibus said. The end had not come at Istvan V. They had fought long. They had bled the enemy. They had taught the traitors that the Iron Hands and the Raven Guard were not extinct. Levanus extended his hand. "The flesh is weak," he said. He and Calibus clasped forearms.
"Victorus aut mortis,"
said Calibus. Levanus's smile was grim. "That is certain," he said. Calibus raised his bolter. When the end came, he would fire. He did not wait long. The forward section of the Thunderhawk peeled back for him. He had time to pull the trigger before the flames of night engulfed him. The fleets of the three legions fired first. The capital ships trained their biggest guns on the Veritas Ferrum. A third of the other vessels did as well. The rest of the fleet hammered the resurrected ship's escort. The barrage was simultaneous, coordinated between the flagships. The demonic fleet sailed directly into explosive hell. The salvo vaporized four of the Veritas's cloud of escorts in an instant. The ghoul ships returned to oblivion, skeletons shattered into fragments. A curtain of blasts spread out behind the enemy fleet as lance fire, reaching past the ships, smashed approaching fragments of the necrosphere. On the bridge of the Samothrace, Shipmaster Althusser said, "They can be destroyed." Carminus shouted the same words on the Red Tier. Across the fleets, in hundreds of ships, a roar of defiance met the success of the bombardment. The great barrage at the gate over Piran had led to nothing. But here, enemy vessels vanished. Others limped on, broken, on the edge of falling back into the tomb that had spat them out. The triumphant refrain lasted as long as the Veritas Ferrum was obscured by the star-death brilliance of scores of plasma blasts and multiple Nova cannon hits. An angry dawn bathed the void. Then the abomination emerged from the fire. Streams of flame ran along its length and wreathed the huge moving gargoyles. The silhouettes jerked in anger. The skull of the prow gaped wide, its roar raging across the psychic ether and resounding in the minds of every soul in the Imperium's ships. There were craters on the hull. Portions of superstructure slumped like candle wax. But the craters vanished, filled in by the flowing excrescences of disease. New pillars of brass and bone shot up around the superstructure, reinforcing it, rebuilding the massive fortress of clustered jagged towers. It weathered the barrage and drove on towards the fleet, its speed undiminished, its hunger growing with its wrath. The demon fleet returned fire. A storm of warp energy scythed through the legions. The barrage took the form of entwined lightning and flame. The void tore open at the passage of the blasts, filling the space between the closing formations with clouds of blood. The storm hammered void shields and triggered emergency activations of Geller fields. Where the defences fell, metal burst into unnatural fire and hulls warped into carnivorous life. The huge jaws of the Veritas Ferrum vomited black flame against the Samothrace. The Ultramarine's battleship ploughed into a burning maelstrom that swept over the entire hull. The void shields shrieked with strain, flaring like suns. A chain reaction collapse began as the Samothrace came out of the fire. Its prow turned up gradually, and the ship, trailing smoke and burning gas, began to rise above the direct line of fire of the skull. The flagships took the brunt of the first demonic salvo. There were losses in the fleets, mostly frigates, a first culling of the smaller ships. But the numbers of the legions were vast. The ships of the Imperium outnumbered the demonic several times over. The formations were undiminished. They tightened up as the moment of collision approached. Unscathed vessels drew up beside the damaged ones, ready to draw fire and support their comrades. The Veritas Ferrum appeared to lunge forwards. It came at the legions with the speed of nightmare. Its path was a straight line, as if the ship was too massive to manoeuvre, or too powerful to divert. It battered through the lance beams and cannon fire. Wounds opened and closed on its hull. The mouths on its flanks chanted a psychic chorus that came ahead of the ship like a bow wave. The choir shouted in triumphant wrath as the Veritas plunged into the heart of the Ultramarine's wedge, its guns firing to port and starboard. The Samothrace, already rising, narrowly avoided a collision. The behemoth passed just below its stern. The barrage of warp fire had the effect of a supernova in the heart of the fleets. Multiple beams burned through the glory of fire and the legendary sun. The ships seemed to freeze in their forward's motion, transfixed by 100 spears of night. Their atmospheres vented in moments, gales blowing out of multiple killing breaches in their hulls. The glory of fire's engines went critical. The shockwave from the plasma detonation crashed against the void shields of a dozen ships, breaking open their defences, leaving them vulnerable to a new deluge of enemy fire. The glory of fire vanished in its self-immolation. The legendary sun went dark. Tears half a mile long raked its hull. Its engines were silent. Its decks had collapsed and fused with one another. Tens of thousands of crew were crushed to a thin slick of pulp in fused ruin. The Veritas Ferrum was a bludgeon, breaking open the wedge, forcing the vessels into evasive action, the impact rippling out over the entire span of the fleets. As the shockwave from the glory of fire had expended its fury, corrupted light ran down the length of the legendary sun. Its hull grew spines, and it accelerated again, turning its guns on the unbroken vigil. The other ships hit by the demonic barrage also transformed into corrupted wraiths. They attacked, burning the vessels that had come to their aid. The formations of the Ultramarines collapsed. Disorder grew exponentially. Ships that had not yet died succumbed to the infections of their festering wounds. Machine spirits screamed in madness. They fell into oblivion, but the madness lived on, and summoned them forth again, transformed into monsters. Metastasizing cancer reached more deeply and widely through the ships of the 13th Legion. The attack that had begun from the front was now coming from every direction. The charge of the Veritas Ferrum disrupted the Ford's movement of the Imperial fleets. The demonic ships multiplied. Immediate, proximate fire forced the Legion ships to turn away from the advance and bring their weapons to bear on the Revenant vessels. The wedge formation turned into a melee. The Veritas Ferrum moved deeper into the formations, spreading ruin with its monstrous broadsides. Its escorts followed closely. With the Ultramarines stalled, the Dark Angels and the Blood Angels used the Ford's momentum they still had to bring the angles of their attacks inwards. Their crossfire decimated the rearmost ships of the demonic fleet. Behind the enemy came the great swarm of bones. The shell had fractured into clusters, ranging in size from a single grave to planetoids. The arriving storm drew the focus of the 1st and 9th Legions. The shell disintegrated under fire, but the storm was infinite. For hundreds of thousands of miles, the void was grey with rushing death. More than half the ships had to use their guns to keep the battlefield clear, and still some of the larger chunks came through. Meteors of bones slammed into flanks and superstructures. The skull, with the spiked crown, larger than a hive city, smashed into the bridge of the Blood Angels' 9 Crusaders. The collision destroyed the skull and decapitated the ship. It surged on through the void, rudderless, its officers dead. It disappeared into the grey tempest, battered into darkness, at last dying in fiery paroxysm. The Samothrace climbed above the Veritas Ferrum, then came about. Althusa expected the Veritas to have put real distance between them by the time the Samothrace had finished its turn, but the demon ship had slowed. It was where it sought to be, in the midst of its prey. Everything was lesser before it, and everything died, only to rise again as a hideous disciple, spreading its message of devastation. "All ships," Althusser voxed across the fleets. "If you are crippled, enact self-immolation." The glory of fire had not risen from oblivion. Its destruction had been complete. "Take the enemy down with you." The Veritas Ferrum was in close range. It was under fire from every ship not already engaged. The efforts were futile. The salvos were small and impacts healed as fast as they formed. If the initial strikes had had so little effect, it would take something catastrophic to break the spine of the beast. The desperate idea came to her in the moment huge batteries on the stern of the Veritas turned and fired at the Samothrace. There was no question of evasion. She winced at the light from the void shield flares. They deflected the worst of the initial damage. Then the black, burning lightning seared its way through and struck the Samothrace amidships. The armour of the upper hull erupted. Ruptured plasma conduits launched geysers of flame into the void. Althusser felt the depth of the wound without a damage report. The deck shook as if the battleship was staggering, a giant of legend struck and bleeding from the abdomen. She knew the controls were sluggish. She knew they were losing velocity. The rhythm of the engines changed. Ahead, the Veritas Ferrum began to come about. It was slow, a world-changing orbit. As it gradually turned to port, the jaws of the bow were half-closed. The skull appeared to be grinning. Soon the Veritas would be broadside to the Samothrace, half its batteries trained on the Ultramarine's flagship, and it was still moving forwards. When the Veritas fired, the ships would be at point-blank range.
"Launch cyclonic torpedoes," Althusser said.
"Shipmaster," Lortinix began.
"This close in, we will achieve at least one of two ends," Althusser finished. "Single-stage torpedo. Give me detonation on impact."
The Samothrace launched its planet killer. Althusser and her officers stood to attention to witness the end of their tragedy. The torpedo hit. The entire length of the Veritas Ferrum convulsed as if it had turned liquid. A maelstrom took hold of the ship's hull. Then came the great fire. Guilliman and the Lion dived through the doorway ahead of the collapsing walls, then turned to meet the immense demon's attack. The monsters charged through rubble across the hall. The altar room was gone. The portal covered the north wall, the materium screaming at its edges. The portal unleashed a flood of demons into the temple. They swarmed before the giant and around its feet. It crushed the slew beneath the slow, grinding iron of its legs. Dark Angels, Ultramarines, and Blood Angels met the demons with a battle cry of vengeance. The hall boomed with bolter thunder and the purifying blaze of power swords. The fury of the legionaries broke the demonic tide, and the space beneath the dome became a maelstrom of slaughter.
"The loyal sons of the Emperor," Guilliman called. "Now we shall make the enemy fall."
The Primarchs ran at the great monster as it reached for them. It smashed its colossal sword at Guilliman. He rushed under the swing. The sword buried half its length in the flagstones. They melted into gibbering flesh. Warp flames rushed outwards from the gap. Guilliman fired upwards with the Arbitrator into the demon's wrist. He struck the limb with the Hand of Dominion at the same time. Muscle and bone parted. Ichor gushed into Gilliman's face, bubbling his skin with acid. Severed from its master, the sword exploded with a wave of uncontrolled energy. The demon screamed and struck at Guilliman with its immense claw. Guilliman threw himself to the side, but the edge of the limb clipped his shoulder, smashing him down. His fall drove a groove into the floor. He rolled to his left, just as the huge arm came at him again, pulverizing stone, shaking the walls of the Delphos. As Guilliman regained his feet, the Lion leapt onto the back of the beast. Shrieking in rage, it whirled its giant mass, trying to shake the Primarch off. Its horns slanted backwards over its head, and the Lion had seized one of them. His cloak billowed behind him as he clung on with his left hand. His right raised the wolf blade.
"I hunted greater beasts than you on Caliban,"
he shouted, "and I slew them all!" He soared into the rear of the demon's neck. It reared up, scuttling backwards on four of its legs. It slammed into the temple wall, crushing the lion between its bulk and the masonry. The wolfblade kept snarling. Gouts of ichor and shredded flesh splashed up on the stone. The demon looked straight up. Serpent and lightning, its tongue whipped out of its mouth. The hall strobed with violet and green light as the tongue lashed behind the demon's head. The wall burst into flame. It limned the silhouette of the lion as he drove the wolfblade deeper into the demon's neck. Gilliman pounded over the floor after the great demon. Whirlwinds of fire and flesh tried to stop him. He held the trigger down on the arbitrator. The stream of explosive shells shattered their forms, clearing his way. Above him, two of the creature's massive piston-driven legs flailed in the air. They clashed together, and when they did, lightning flared again. The movement of the legs, the timing of the collisions, the height of the demon and the arc of a jump were the givens of an equation. Gilliman saw the vectors of force and momentum. At the moment of his leap, the equation was resolved. As his legs bent, he maglocked the arbitrator to his side. He jumped and reached up with his now free right hand. He grabbed the end of a leg as it rushed inwards and used its momentum to launch himself at the demon's chest. With all the force of his flight, he drove the hand of dominion into the monster's thorax. The power gauntlet annihilated demonic matter. The huge body collapsed below the neck. The monster's roar was cut off. It slashed out one more time, then disintegrated. The body tried to heave back, but the wolfblade's growl rose in a rattling crescendo, and the sword ripped all the way through and came out the throat. The demon slumped down. Its fall crushed a score of lesser abominations that had rushed forwards, shrieking as their leader was destroyed. Gilliman and the lion jumped down from the body. Foul smoke lifted from it, hacking at the throat with razored claws. The metal and the flesh began to lose substance. The Primarchs waded into a streaming rush of demons. The portal disgorged them without cease.
"There are too many to stop," Gorod voxed.
The abominations were a tide flowing past the blocks of Legiones Astartes and out of the hall. Gilliman blasted the head off a four-legged fiend with a scorpion's tail.
"Are you in contact with our forces outside the temple?" he asked.
"Well, not since the portal opened."
So be it. He trusted the chapter masters of all the legions to do what had to be done, and stopping the incursion was a distraction, not the goal. The three legions were not here to reclaim Davin.
"We fight to hold our position," he said,
answering Gorod, but voxing on an open battle channel.
"We stay in this hall. There is no retreat."
Two crimson demons, wielding swords, attacked him with simultaneous swings. They were far too slow. The Hand of Dominion crushed the skull of one abomination. The arbitrator cut the other in half. A monstrous wave of force blasted from the portal, disintegrating the demons on the threshold. The floor of the temple heaved upwards, splitting into uneven plates of stone. The dome cracked open and rained masonry. The walls swayed, buckled, and leaned in towards each other. The tremors rolled on. The Delphos groaned. From inside the gateway, Sanguinius roared. To a man, the sanguinary guard turned at his voice, plunging into the abominations with renewed fury.
"Now the battle is truly joined," the lion called.
Side by side, Gilliman and the lion fought their way through the tide of demons towards the portal, marching steadily over the pitching and rising floor. The portal flashed and raged. The temple rocked back and forth, buffeted by the clashing, unseen waves of a struggle beyond Gilliman's reach. The flame burst swallowed Sanguinius and Mardale. The conflagration ate at the angel, turning his matter into energy. Lightning flashed outwards from the tips of his wings. The demon snarled in anger, its many eyes narrowing. It slashed to the side, twisting the blade in carmine in Sanguinius's grip and throwing him to his left. He made the flight his, catching the momentum with a beat of his wings. He rose into the air of the Enginarium. The abominations below raged at him. Clawed hands reached for him from the galleries. Winged monsters circled the dome, their mindless screams piercing through the clamour, but they did not descend to meet him. The gathered army of abominations was not intervening. His struggle with Mardale had an audience, and for the moment, nothing more. Mardale looked up at him.
You do not die here,
it said, confirming fate. Its voice was tremendous, drowning out the thousands of horrors bearing witness.
Death is later, forged in futility. Here destiny is remade. Here you will serve.
Flames coursed through Sanguinius's blood. The mercy that tempered his spirit had fled. It was not wanted here. He dived towards Mardale and answered the demon with the spear of Telesto. Blazing gold struck the demon full in the chest. Mardale roared. The priest of Chaos Undivided, who saw the hidden, who looked into the depths of Primarchs and Legions, recoiled, and for a moment its eyes were shut. It was blind. The blank eyes of its skull erupted with sheets of warp flame. Mardale turned its head from side to side, sweeping the Engenarium with the fire. It caught the shrieking abominations in the dome during the burn. They tumbled downwards, their bodies given over to sudden change, their forms losing all coherence and then cohesion, until they were a rain of ash upon the deck. Unbound from the chains of the demon's lies, Sanguinius soared on the wings of his freedom. He swerved around the blasts from its eyes. He would fell this priest. He would cleave the Undivided. Sanguinius turned in a sharp angle away from the demon. He arrowed his flight to the canyon between the masses of the engines. The mouths gabbled in anger, and their tongues lashed out for him as he passed. The immense heaving walls called out for their master. With a ferocious beat of his wings, Sanguinius veered right, coming in close to the port engine. He plunged the blade and carmine into the wall. He flew even faster, dragging the sword through the fusion of metal and flesh. He slashed open a wound 50 feet long. The wall screamed in pain. Ikor and Prometheum gouted, and then there was a burst of ignited plasma. A curtain of flame billowed down the length of the canyon, washing over Mardale as the demon strode into the gap. Sanguinius rose above the flames, wheeled around and came back at Mardale, gouging the port wall. The screams of the engines redoubled. Explosions overlapped and fueled each other, shaking the canyon. From the midst of the developing firestorm, Mardale struck out wildly, blasts of warp energy stabbing up in every direction. Sanguinius soared over the roiling core of the explosions that marked the demon's position, then dropped, racing back low as the fires began to fade. He swung the sword at the demon's neck. Mardale turned at the last second, and the blade and carmine sank into the spined, chitinous armor of its shoulder. Sanguinius's blow split the plate and cut deeply into the demon flesh beneath. Mardale snarled, and its immense talons seized the angel, arresting his momentum and hurling him against the engine. The wall's teeth gnawed at his armor and sank into his pinions. Jaws parted in fury. Mardale raised its staff and aimed the weapon's points at Sanguinius's throat. Then it hesitated, remembering itself. "You do not dare kill me," Sanguinius thought, feeling the balance of power shift his way. With a burst of fire from the spear of Telesto, he broke Mardale's grip and launched himself upwards. He climbed high, streaking towards the dome of the Engenarium, and at the peak of his flight, prepared to fall upon the demon like a meteor. But Mardale had not finished its sermon.
"Be the Angel of Ruin, or the other ruin will come. It reaches for you now."
Sanguinius hesitated at the moment of descent. The words of the demon stabbed through his anger. They did not diminish it, but his awareness grew of the blackness that flew with him. The thing was of him, but not yet with him. It was of the future, though seeded in the past. It had no shape yet, but it was strong, and it made him strong. He could not shed it, and so he used it. Though he felt it eat at his self-control, he used it. He burned with justice. He was the fire of loyalty. The thirst grasped at his consciousness too, and he subsumed it to his great and perfect rage. He dived. His moment of hesitation was enough for Mardale to recover. Arms outstretched, the demon shouted, its hymn of praise to the gods it served louder than the choirs of thousands that surrounded it. A warp vortex, a burning wind made visible, gathered at its command. The vortex spread wide, a spinning cone of destruction. It lifted the demon at its apex. A beast upon a throne, Mardale rose to meet Sanguinius's flight. The angel unleashed another strike of light from the spear of Telesto. The demon deflected the blast with its staff and trained the blade at Sanguinius. The head of the weapon crackled with energy, the color of nightmares. Sanguinius folded his wings, accelerating into the dive. He struck with the blade in carmine. The blow would have cut a rhino in two. The demon took the sword in its shoulder. Sanguinius spiked and cut deep through the armor plating of the hide. Mardale hissed, turning, and thrust its staff at Sanguinius's chest. It stabbed through his armor and through his flesh. In the moment before the full shock of pain and warp fire seized him, Sanguinius stabbed the spear of Telesto into the abomination's central eye. Angel and priest trapped the other's weapon in their body. The vortex spun them. Power burst around them. They clashed in the heart of a crucible, where reality was made and unmade, where futures birthed and died. The Engenarium vanished from Sanguinius's sight. The spike in his chest, the icon of the priest's office, sent the torments of the future through him. Psychic waves shook him, seeking to detach him from purpose and throw him into an abyss of unfettered pride. He balanced between two tempests, abstract storms of triumph and of the fall into the blackness. He could barely make out the shape of the demon before him. He held on to the reality of his foe. He cut deeper with the blade in carmine. The spear grew hot in his grip as it burned the demon flesh.
"The choice remains," said Mardale.
At last there was pain in the monster's voice. There was the first hint of desperation.
"Fall and rise, or stand and fall. To fall is written. Fall to power, fall to glory!"
Its staff flared again. The blackness rushed closer. The dark thing was not just part of him. It was linked to his choice to stand against Mardale. Cracks appeared in the armour of his purpose. Mardale laughed. It reached out with its free hand. Its huge talons seized Sanguinius's skull.
"See and know,"
the demon bellowed.
"See and choose!"
The blackness took him. His rage transformed. His consciousness split. He disappeared into the dark, and he remained detached from it, a sliver of his identity preserved in the suspension of choice. He split into madness and agony, because now he saw the true nature of the darkness.
"This is the consequence," said Mardale.
"Wrath of the future, flaw of origins, doom of sons."
The fate Sanguinius had declared he would accept unfolded again. Horus killed him again. This time he looked on at his death from a remove. Even so, he felt the fatal blow. As he saw himself die, he witnessed the birth of the darkness. It was a howl of rage, summoned by betrayal, forged from that which was broken in his blood. It was a rage of terminal darkness, and its shriek of birth sounded down the long millennia, to be heard by all his sons, until the final blood angel should fall. The moment of his death froze. It became eternal. It could never be expunged. It was the final expression of his soul. It was his scream, his anger, his fury at betrayal, and it would live in the blood of his legion forever. His lost time on the Red Tier returned to him. He remembered. He remembered holding Uncani Kano, and not seeing the librarian. He had seen Horus. He had not seen the bridge of the Red Tear. He had seen the vengeful spirit. From the abyssal depths of fury, he had sought vengeance for his death by changing time. He had been about to kill Kano, hallucinating him as the author of a crime yet to come. That was his legacy for his sons. The black rage would come for them and tear reality from their grasp. Roaring hate, they would slip to the moment in their past that marked the beginning of their long fall. They would seek vengeance upon Horus and see him in whoever stood before them. Their fury against evil would turn them into mad butchers.
"This is the choice,"
Mardale boomed.
"This is the choice."
Sanguinius had thought his sacrifice was his alone. He had stood at the precipice of despair at the thought his death would have no meaning. But it would. It would have a dreadful meaning. He did not know if through his death Horus would be stopped. He did not know if this choice meant the fall of the Imperium. He did know that the sacrifice would be that of his entire legion. If he accepted his fate, the blood of his sons and of those they would kill would be on his hands. The angel screamed in agony, and the demon grasped its prize. And suddenly, there was thunder.